RadioInfluence.com.
Welcome into another edition of the MMA Report podcast. Of course, I am Jason Foy. Typically, on a Wednesday episode, I'll be joined by Daniel Galvan, but got to send the positive vibes out to Daniel. Of course, if you're a longtime listener of this podcast, you know Daniel lives down in the Rio Grande Valley there on the southern border of Texas, and I've been texting with him the past couple of days, and he has no power in his house, and as he told me, he said, he goes, bro, it's 30 degrees, pretty much all I can do is sleep, so send those positive vibes, but filling in for Daniel this week is my friend, your friend, he's the fighter, Pete Rogers Jr. Pete, appreciate you getting here on a Wednesday morning. I know you're deep diving into Saturday's card, but appreciate you taking an hour out here to jump on the pod, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me, and thank you everybody for tuning in.
Of course, this episode is presented by Roman and HelloFresh. I'll let you know about the offers that Roman and HelloFresh have for my listeners. Come up here later on in the show. Some of the things that myself and Pete are going to talk about on this edition of the podcast. We're going to talk about a tweet that I had prior to UFC 258 and whether or not people were going to buy that pay-per-view. Also, a very interesting comment from Dana White talking about basically how they know exactly who is ordering pay-per-views, who's not, how frequently they order pay-per-views. I just thought it was really interesting. As you know, I like to get on the business side of MMA, so I thought that was an interesting conversation. Plus, we're going to talk about which current top 10 UFC welterweight has the best shot to dethrone Kamaru Usman. Going to play a clip for you about John McCarthy talking about weight cutting in relation to Bobby Green. Talk a little bit about Stefan Struve announcing his retirement. Plus, we do have some listener questions as well. But Pete, let's get right into it on this one. I had this tweet on Friday, and really it came from our Slack channel over on Awesomeo, where, you know, people were kind of, you know, debating on whether or not you were going to buy the UFC 258 pay-per-view. And full disclosure, I did not buy the pay-per-view. I made the, it was a decision for me as a consumer more than anything else, just primarily as a consumer. I said, you know what? Yes, it's got a premium fight, but the rest of the card I saw is a fight night card. So I made the consumer decision to say that I was not going to buy the pay-per-view, which, and look, I always say, like, that's a personal decision, because one of my fears that I do have is I do worry about, could we be heading towards a boxing pay-per-view model as opposed to what we've seen in the UFC pay-per-view model. Now, look, I'm going to buy next month's pay-per-view because we got three title fights on the card, and I'm as much interested in Petr Yan, Aljamain Sterling. That is the fight that ultimately is drawing me that pay-per-view. But my tweet was just simply, are you buying the UFC 258 pay-per-view? And look, it's a very small sample, just under 700 votes on this one. 85% of the response said no. 15% said yes. I was not surprised by that, Pete, just based on what this pay-per-view was. I know you watched it, so yeah, what was your take of the pay-per-view? I mean, did you feel like it was worth $80?
I mean, not too often do you find me questioning whether or not I'm going to get the fights, and I found myself, you know, really debating whether I was going to get it or not. Ultimately made an excuse, said, yeah, it's my upcoming birthday weekend, so I'm going to get it. If that wasn't the case, most likely I was not going to get it. You know, I'm so passionate about MMA and I love to support it. But when you brought up the, you know, the consumer decision, I really thought that was a smart, you know, a smart take on it. And I wish I thought of it from that perspective. I thought that the card delivered. I thought it was good. I don't know if it was worth the entire amount of the pay-per-view ask, but you know, it was a good card. The main event is really why you were purchasing the fight, and I wanted to be on top of, you know, what happened in the fight. I wanted to know right then and there. I didn't want to have to go and rewatch it or find clips here and there. But you know, it was a very underwhelming card on paper. Sometimes those cards pop. Decent fights, but I mean, if you look at this card coming up this weekend, that should have been a pay-per-view card over last weekend.
Yeah, no, I mean, and I think we may have talked about it on our Awesomeo show last week, and I think where the UFC really dropped the ball is they should have put that Corey Sandhagen versus Frankie Edgar fight. If that fight was on the pay-per-view, I'm probably buying it. And full disclosure, Pete, I was in bed by like 11 o'clock. I watched the preliminary card. I watched those prelims, and just kind of me and my wife just kind of hung out, and she's like, ready to go to bed. Yeah, let's go to bed.
So, yeah, I couldn't avoid the fights, man. Like, there's not too many things that I look forward to. And anytime the fights are on, you know, I'm always, you know, tuning in. So it was a very difficult decision, but I still got it.
You know, one of the more interesting things that I heard following the event actually came from Dana White. Because you know me, you know, I'm all about the business side of MMA. I've really kind of delved into that over the past couple of years. And I want to play this comment from Dana White, which I thought was very telling about the business side of the UFC and how their pay-per-views now being on, you know, on a streaming service actually benefits them.
When you look at what, like you guys asked me yesterday, the negative talk going into this fight or whatever, you have casual fans that will come in for the big ones, and then you have hardcore fans that will watch everything. And there's different groups of people that come and go. We can look at who's watching. And you know, and know who watches, you know, 10 a year, who watches this. We can do that with the pay-per-views. And you have totally different groups of people that come in for different fighters.
Pete, I found that fascinating to hear Dana White talk about that, because I think that's because you have to imagine, like, ESPN and the UFC must have a spreadsheet of, like, the different categories they have. And, like, look, when it comes to a UFC pay-per-view buyer, you would put me in the hardcore category. You know, I'm typically the guy that's buying every pay-per-view, just like yourself. I gotta imagine when they see that I'm a guy that literally has bought every pay-per-view since it went on ESPN Plus, and then I didn't buy this one, that's gotta be like a little bit of a flag to them.
Yeah, that's a great point. And, you know, I think that it could raise some eyebrows and make them, you know, perhaps think about the cards moving forward. But it's ultimately about the turnout. And I think that a decent amount of people still tuned in. And, you know, I was one of them. I kind of got, you know, suckered into getting it again. So hopefully Dana hits me with some compensation or something. I've been buying every pay-per-view out there.
Yeah, I mean, look, in my thing, it's like I said, it was more as a consumer, even though, I mean, look, I wanted, you know, I looked at Usman Burns as very much a premium fight. It was just, for me, it was just about a consumer of saying, you know what, I don't see the value here in it, you know, and as I've always said on my show, like, to me, that's a personal decision that everyone has to make. I'm never going to be someone that's going to sit here and tell you, you must buy this pay-per-view, or no, don't buy this pay-per-view. At the end of the day, it's your decision or whether or not you want to buy the pay-per-view. But, you know, I also thought it was interesting when Dana was talking about the illegal streamers out there, how, you know, they were going to go after one of the bigger ones and that streamer didn't do it. And then I saw someone else on another podcast comment go, well, maybe that streamer didn't put it up there because no one cared.
Yeah.
And the other part of me wonders, like, when Dana is openly talking about these illegal streams that are out there, is he enticing the audience to basically say, hey, fellas, don't feel like you gotta go buy it. There are illegal streams out there. Like, I feel like it's one of those things, like, I understand where Dana's coming from, but I'm also like, man, you might be like kind of telling people out there, hey, by the way, there are free streams out there. They're illegal, but they're out there.
Yeah, I feel like some people could be searching for them on Google now, you know, trying to find those nice streams, especially when the card is underwhelming. I think that more people turn towards the illegal stream for this past weekend than probably other weekends. I mean, like, say on the McGregor card, more often than not, a lot of people want to see it. I mean, you will have people that don't want to pay money to see any fights, but, you know, if you want to show any support to the UFC, you buy the big ones.
Like, I guess I come from the world of, I just want to buy a pay-per-view where I know it's going to be a solid stream, solid quality. You know, I will tell you, I did go on Twitter like around like 10:05. And I did see people complaining about how they're struggling to buy a pay-per-view once again, which, like, am I in the minority here? Like, I buy the pay-per-view like hours before it, so I know it's all set. Like, I feel like I'm in the minority of people that do this.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I don't want to deal with any interruptions. I think last year we had an issue where the only one I could purchase that would go through was, you know, the Spanish broadcast. So I just wanted to make sure and always ensure that I'm going to have good stream quality and that I'm going to have the fights in a timely manner, because I don't want to be behind, Jason.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that one. Yeah, it's sometimes you just hit the mute. You know, you don't necessarily have to listen to the commentary, you know.
That is true. That is probably the best way to view fights from an unbiased perspective.
Yeah, I should not say that as someone who's in the play-by-play business.
Yeah, right.
I probably should not say that. But but obviously it did have some memorable things there. Most notably what Kamaru Usman was able to do, getting rocked early on, that fight comes back, when that jab that goes out there. But I was listening to the Anakin Florian podcast, and they brought this question up, and I thought I was going to bring it up if I was with Daniel today, but since you're here, get a fire perspective on this one. And the question was essentially, what current top 10 UFC welterweight has the best shot to dethrone Kamaru Usman? So our top 10 challengers right now are Colby Covington, Gilbert Burns, Leon Edwards, Jorge Masvidal, Stephen Thompson, Michael Chiesa, Tyron Woodley, Damian Maia, Neil Magny, or Vicente Luque. All signs do point they are going to go towards or at least Usman wants the rematch against Masvidal, which, let's be real here. He realizes that's a money fight, and that's the biggest money fight he can make because, while Kamaru Usman is maybe the best fighter we have in the game right now, with Khabib Nurmagomedov essentially retired, he's just not a draw. It was comical to me to see Usman and his manager basically essentially acting like they're calling the shots, but basically essentially saying, come on, Masvidal, please take this fight. Please take this fight. It's just kind of funny, but like the name that everyone is pointing towards is Stephen Thompson. And with you having that karate background, how can he beat Usman?
Yeah, I think that the two people that are possibilities of dethroning Usman is Colby Covington and Stephen Thompson, like you mentioned. And I will say that Stephen Thompson is such a tricky equation to try and solve. If you look back on when Tyron Woodley was scheduled to fight Stephen Thompson, he had to bring in and fly in all decorated karate specialists to kind of emulate that style. And if you've never dealt with the footwork or the stance or the kicks and the angles of a karate fighter, it's a very difficult thing to deal with. And a lot of people think, well, you just go out there and you wrestle. Well, that's very difficult to do when in karate you have excellent footwork and you're able to, minimize getting controlled in the cage. So like with Stephen Thompson being so in and out with his movement, throwing so many lead leg kicks, that's the big thing. Lead leg kicks in karate versus rear leg kicks in other styles such as Muay Thai and kickboxing and so forth. You're fighting a fighter that has two jabs, essentially. They have their jab with their hand, and they have their lead foot that can ultimately be a jab, whether it's a lead leg round kick or a side kick to keep you at bay. And I think getting inside that distance is so much more difficult than people realize until they face somebody like that. You saw how Tyron Woodley, when he had success in the fights against Stephen Thompson, it was because he had to blitz forward. Now, a guy that stays on the outside and is very patient, like a Vicente Luque, you saw how, Stephen Thompson picked him apart. That, you have to mix it up and you have to really crowd a karate fighter. So I will say that Wonder Boy, despite being a little older in the weight class, I think that just the style alone can cause a lot of problems for a lot of people and be a very competitive fight for Kamaru Usman.
Yeah, I'm with you that to me it is Covington or it is Stephen Thompson. Kind of the guy that, he's fought Kamar. I mean, it's now been 6 years, is Leon Edwards. Of course, we haven't seen Leon Edwards in, 2 years at this point, and hopefully he gets a fight coming up on March 13th because he was supposed to take on Khamzat Chimaev, who obviously we'll see what Khamzat. I did see last night that he is actually coming to the United States to get health care here in the United States. He's having long-term effects of COVID, which, it does happen. So I'm with you there. I mean, look, Usman, it's amazing. Like if you told me, if a super fight were to be made, to me, it is Usman Khabib.
Yeah, 100%. I put a poll up about that fight, and a lot of people seem to be favoring Khabib in that fight. And I would be extremely interested in that. I do feel like they're friends, but we've seen him just go up against Gilbert Burns. And you mentioned all the guys in the top 10. To me, right, I don't really see many people, if any, taking that, that belt away from Kamaru. Like, I don't want to say it's a weak top 10, but compared to other weight classes, I feel like there are legitimate contenders that can dethrone the king. And I look at that list that you mentioned, and I'm like, I don't see how they do it.
Yeah, I mean, I think the interesting part is going to be is kind of where does Gilbert Burns go from here? Mm-hmm. You know, we'll see. You know, it appears Colby Covington is not really interested in that Leon Edwards fight. That seemed to be the route that the UFC really wants to go there. And if you say it's going to be Usman Masvidal, I'm guessing you're probably looking at, you know, a Thompson Burns. Chiesa's looking for a top five opponent. One of the more interesting things I heard, and this is a name that's been brought up as a potential short notice fight for Leon Edwards, is Bilal Muhammad, who's coming off that win. Mm-hmm. Last weekend. But, you know, Bilal, who, he was doing an interview on the Anakin Florian podcast, and he's like, look, he goes, I wasn't going to sit there and call out a guy in the top three. I got to be realistic. You know, I'm 13th in the world. You know, that's why he called out number 12. But he also kind of, you know, he goes, I need to do some rug recovery. But he goes, yeah, man, if they call me up, I think you know what the answer is going to be. You know,
I think he should have just said that, you know, anybody above him, he's willing to take the fight. Because I think, you know, if you saw Bilal Muhammad in that last performance, he looked incredible.
Yeah, no. I mean, and Bilal is a guy that's, you know, now won 8 of his last 9 fights. It's a tremendous run that he's been on. And he's just one of those guys at 170. You just want to see get a top 10 type fight to see what he was able to do there. But yeah, but the other thing with Usman is he's fought most of these guys already too. So, I mean, look, I think unless, you know, and he talked about it on the Joe Rogan podcast like a year ago about basically, you know, his body, you know, all the wear and tear over the years. And I think that may be what takes Usman down eventually is just the wear and tear of all these years of athletic abilities. Before we get into a comment that John McCarthy made on his podcast, do want to talk about one of my sponsors here on this week's edition of the podcast, and that is Roman. Talking about erectile dysfunction isn't easy. Usually we just brush it off or blame ourselves, saying things like, I lost my mojo, or we avoid it altogether with excuses like, I had a long day at work, or sorry, honey, I'm just not feeling it. But with Roman, it's easy to talk about it. With real healthcare professionals who can prescribe real medication, it's simple, safe, and totally discreet. With Roman, you get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. A healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, Roman will ship it to you with free 2-day shipping. That's right, free 2-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward, simple, and discreet. Getting started is simple. Just go to GetRoman.com/MMAReport and complete an online visit. Erectile dysfunction used to be tough to tackle, but now there's Roman. Complete an online visit today to connect with a healthcare professional to take care of it. Go to GetRoman.com/MMAReport today. If approved, you'll get $15 off your first order of ED treatment. That's GetRoman.com/MMAReport. GetRoman.com/MMAReport. Of course, always check out our sponsors. When you hit that unique URL code, that does let them know that you heard about them here on the MMA Report podcast. Now, throughout the early part of the week, I'm taking in a bunch of different podcasts, and one of the more interesting comments I heard this week came from Big John McCarthy, and he was talking about what happened with Bobby Green. Of course, everyone knows what happened there. We're supposed to take on Jim Miller. And Jim Miller and then Bobby Green unable to make it to fight night as he reportedly collapsed backstage, was pulled from the fight. I want to listen to let you hear from Big John McCarthy. His comments about a minute long where he talks about weight cutting in MMA.
It's the same thing that happens all the time, too frequently. What do you want to say? How many times do you need a fighter to fucking fall face first in front of you because they're fucking dehydrated to no end and just think, oh, that's okay. It's not okay. It's wrong and things need to change. You can't continue to have guys do this because, you know, luckily Bobby is okay. Okay. But he, you know, he's not going to be the last one. And eventually, Josh, you're playing Russian roulette. One of them's going to die. And then whose fault is it? Is it the commission's fault? Is it the UFC's fault? Is it the fighter's fault? Is it the trainer's fault? Whose fault is it? Well, it's all of them. All of them. Because the weight cutting has gotten out of control. We've got a lot of guys that are finally starting to say, hey, I can't make these weight cuts. They're killing me in the fight. I'm not performing well. I'm going up. And they're fighting well. But we still have a lot of guys, man. They're cutting a ton of weight. And Bobby cuts a lot of weight.
And Pete, I feel like you're a great person to talk to this about because you made the decision last year that your days at 45 are over. You're moving up to 55 and, you know, basically just because of, you know, what it took you. I mean, you got down to 45, but it was, you know, obviously it was a battle to get down there. When you hear what Big John said there, what we do know about the Bobby Green situation from a fighter's aspect, like how do you view it?
Yeah. I mean, I would love it if nobody was cutting weight and you were just going in there and fighting at your natural weight. I have taken fights in the past at a heavier weight class. So like a catch weight of 150 and I didn't have to cut as much weight as I normally do. And I felt amazing. Like I felt like my cardio was better. You know, you just felt better overall. You felt like you could perform better. You know, I was walking around close to 170 pounds, cutting down to 45. So it was a pretty significant cut. I know that there's probably fighters out there that cut more, but I'm a long, lean guy. So like, you know, once I get down to those last couple, 3 pounds, like that's the most difficult that you'll hear anybody is, you know, the final couple pounds are the most tough. You know, I would love it if you were able to fight at your natural weight class. I had to move up a weight class with fighting at 55 now moving forward, but I just don't know what the alternative is because I feel like you tell everybody that they have to fight more at their natural weight. I still think that fighters are going to push the limits and try to get the biggest advantage possible. In any sport, you see athletes trying to get the biggest advantage possible. So unless you institute hydration tests, which I think would be something that is a nice method to make sure that fighters are coming in hydrated and healthy, I don't see a way around weight cuts.
Yeah, I mean, I was around you 2 years ago when you were cutting down to make weight, you know, for your fight there in Bellator. And I mean, look, I've been around this game a long time, and I will tell you, like when I was traveling to Bellator events more frequently, one time I was traveling frequently. The one thing I didn't like doing interviews the day before the weigh-ins because typically the fire did not want to be there. let's be honest about it. You know, that's just the way it is. But like, I think my biggest fear I have with this sport is, and we pray this never happens, but what happens if it's a UFC or Bellator and a fighter loses their life trying to make weight, of what is the long-term impact it will have on this sport? Like that is like, when I think about, you know, kind of what ifs, that's like one of my biggest what ifs of what will happen to the sport if that does happen.
Yeah, I'm worried about that as well. And, you know, we've had a lot of close calls and luckily nothing has happened, you know, on the major platforms, but we have seen it happen in regional shows. And, you know, you have fighters trying to either cut too much weight or cut too much weight too fast. And I think that's such a worry of mine. But, you know, like I said, I would love to see what type of alternative there is, because, you know, fighters are going to try to push it, you know, and they're going to try to come in with any advantage possible. That's why I do think that hydration tests would make sense. If you do same day weigh-ins, I feel like fighters will still want to cut the weight just to come in with a little bit, you know, a little bit of size over their opponent.
Yeah. I mean, I think the only way I think same day weigh-ins work is if someone misses weight. So like if you are having a fight a month from now and it's at 55, the guy comes in, he misses weight by like 6 pounds. I'm coming, you going, Pete, look, what are you going to weigh tomorrow night? Okay. If you say, hey, I'm going to weigh in 175. Okay. I'm going to the promoter going, look, we'll take the fight. We're going to get X percentage of his purse, but also he's got to weigh in 3-4 hours before the fight. He can't be more than 175.
Yeah, I've actually seen that happen before, and it's a smart decision from the management team of the fighter that did not miss weight, because you don't want to, you know, just get to 20%. Yeah, a lot of fighters are okay with losing 20% because they want to ensure that victory. They want that W. They'll take a 20% pay cut if it really solidifies them to get a win. So I think I really support that strategy from a management perspective, and I totally agree with it.
I wonder, you know, because like it's always this kind of this conversation of like, how much should a fighter be fined and all that? I wonder if, like, you sat there and said, you know what, in the UFC world, Bellator, you're seeing more and more of pretty much most of their purses guaranteed. But in a situation where, you know, you're getting two checks and that, you know, you're doubling your money, I wonder what would happen if they said, if you miss weight, you're ineligible for your win bonus.
Yeah, I like that because you have to, I think they used to do that for the bonus money, but their actual win bonus would make fighters make sure that they don't miss weight. And I think that's a nice little strategy there to ensure safety too.
Yeah, I mean, that's always going to kind of be the debate of what can be done. And, and for Bobby Green, it sounds like, you know, it's going to take him some time to recover. You know, Dana White did mention that, he was very apologetic and reached out to him. By the way, speaking of Dana White, because I'll mention this question that I got from @JoeDaddy85. He said, and this is in relation to Dana White's comments about Gina Carano. Of course, everyone knows what Gina's comments were and kind of, you know, the fact of it for – I don't understand why Dana used it to take a shot at Ariel. I mean, look, everyone knows Dana White and Ariel Helwani are not best buds. They're not going out to a bar to have a drink or to have dinner together. That's just not happening. And Joe says, Dana making it all about himself. I can't seem to find his video of him conquering COVID and not thinking a single person. Wonder why he deleted it. Also, how can journalists back each other up when Dana makes a stupid comment about one of them? A follow-up would have been nice. Joe, I'll just put it there. I have respect for all those people who are credentialed by the UFC, but I think you have to understand how the UFC views them. The UFC views them as an extension of their PR department, and the odds to see any of them follow up to question something Dana White said, I think is literally a 10% chance. I just don't think you're going to see them. Look, when you see Dana White interviews, I think you should not expect that someone is going to push him. I mean, yes, you would love to see the follow-up questions, but when it comes to a press conference scenario, that's just something that you should not expect. The COVID video, which they put out, I don't know, a couple months ago, you know, that basically it was railing on. It was a video completely out of context, took completely out of context. And it was deleted by the UFC not very long. I think the UFC kind of realized that was a dumb video to put out there. You know, they put this video out there to basically tout up Dana White instead of, I don't know, how much tout up the fighters? I'm just saying that's a route you should go with there. But Joe, I'm telling you, you know, when it comes to those press conferences, like, dude, Pete, I was listening to that press conference on a Sunday morning of Dana White. I'm just like literally going, Jesus Christ, can anyone ask a hard question? Like, it is softball question after softball question after softball question.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's job security, right? I mean, you don't want to challenge the guy that's kind of, you know, giving you a platform. But, you know, I think journalism in general, and, you know this better than anybody, the hard questions are important. You know, like, it's important to get those hard questions across. And not too often do we see people challenge Dana White.
There's a way to ask a tough question. Like, I would tell you this, when I've been a part of coaches shows, and, you know, I remember, you know, some people say, oh, you know, no tough questions are asked. I go, listen to the questions. There's tough questions being asked, but they come off in a very friendly, like, there's ways. I will tell you. So here's a perfect example of this. So I'm interviewing Charles Rosa 2 weeks ago for his fight come up here on Saturday night. Now, if you look at, I'm sure you're very well aware of this, you look at Charles Rosa records, it's win, loss, win, loss, win, loss, win, loss in the UFC. I think he's now 3-3 in the UFC. So I was sitting there going, okay, how do you ask the question about what his UFC record is? So I didn't sit there and go, hey, Charles, you know, you haven't won back-to-back fights in the UFC. How do you describe your UFC run?
Yeah,
it's a way of asking the question, but not coming off as an a-hole. Because, like, yeah. I remember this was the last time Saeed Awad fought, and a reporter asked him about losing four in a row. Like, I'm sitting here, right here, same office I'm sitting in, and I'm going, oh my God. And you could see the look on Saeed's face. He's like, are you seriously asking me how I feel about losing four in a row?
Yeah, you got to lighten the questions up a little bit. I mean, like, you know, that would be like Jason asking me something about my submission losses, you know, like, you know, as fighters, we're sensitive about our craft and, you know, we recognize our faults and we, you know, are probably more critical on ourselves than anybody. So, you know, I think that it's all on the delivery and, you know, somebody who's so schooled in journalism and MMA reporting, it goes to show you why you have such a nice stable of fighters that always, you know, are willing to do interviews with you.
I think for me, I just try to make it conversational. Like, yeah. I mean, like, when you listen to me do interviews, I mean, yes, we're going to talk about the fight, but I'm always like going on your Instagram. Let me kind of see, like, you know, I might go on, you know, if I was going to do an interview with Pete, I'd be like, hey, Pete, can you not handle taco hot sauce? Like, as literally as your girlfriend's just laughing at you the whole time.
Oh, that was torture, bro. Oh, my goodness. That was so bad.
Dude, I like hot sauce. I literally, as I'm watching it on your IG, I feel bad for you.
Yeah, it was a million Scoville. So like, it wasn't just like, you know, some little hot sauce. It was pretty wild and definitely, got the better of me there.
Yeah, man. You gotta watch out for some of that hot sauce. You know, I'm a big chicken wing guy, but you know, there becomes like a level. I go, that is too hot.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That was in that category, Jason.
Yeah. It's, but yeah, I felt pay for, but like that's like when I have other people who are either, you know, new to the MMA industry or they're trying to get in the industry and they're like asking me about how I do interviews. I go, first off, I don't write down questions. Mm-hmm. I don't. It is because I'll write down like, you know, your name, record, you know, who you're fighting, where you're fighting, date, last fight, maybe a couple other notes, but more times than not, because I've really learned this over like the past 6 months. When it comes to fighters, their number one social media platform is Instagram. There is no doubt about it in my mind.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know, for me, Instagram is awesome. You can put videos up, you could put photos up. And for fight footage, like when we're breaking down fights, it's easily the best thing to look at of what are you doing lately? Who are you working with? Who are you training with? Like, you know, we love to see, you know, fighters jump around from camp to camp and if they're a part of a good camp, you know, makes us want to back them even more.
By the way, I don't know if you saw this one. Speaking of fighters switching up camps, see Mike Perry's now training at MMA Masters.
I did see that. And I think that's a good move for him. I mean, that guy's been everywhere. He needs to, he's obsessed with the Florida life, which I get. And that's where his family is. And I think that he needs to find a home gym and stick there and actually start to train. I don't know if you saw the back and forth that happened last night or the day before of him and Darren Till on a Skype call or a Zoom call. Oh my goodness, Jason, it is five-star quality. Like it is the most hilarious back and forth. It's like 10 minutes of them just jokingly going back and forth with each other. And it's like a friend that you kind of like, you know, give a hard time to. It was fantastic. I highly recommend it.
So basically like our phone calls.
Oh, 100%. 100%.
Yeah. It's I've seen people talking about it, but I haven't watched it yet, but yeah, Mike Perry, he's going to be taking on Daniel Rodriguez. I want to say in April, I want to say.
Yep. Tough fight.
Because I know Mike had talked about he was going to go up to 85, but I thought it was something I said, oh, because I know he did his last camp at American Top Team, now at MMA Masters. So really interesting there. Before we get into some other things here, do want to let you know about the other sponsor here on this episode of MMA Report Podcast, and that is HelloFresh. With HelloFresh, you get fresh, pre-measured ingredients and mouth-watering seasonal recipes delivered right to your door. HelloFresh lets you skip those trips to the grocery store and makes home cooking easy, fun, and affordable. That's why it's America's number one meal kit. HelloFresh offers convenient, contact-free delivery right to your doorstep for easy home cooking with your family. I am a HelloFresh subscriber, so I get a box every Monday. I get there about 11 a.m., knocks on the door. I pick it up, and I will tell you this. Me and my wife have had HelloFresh now for about, I don't know, 8-9 months now. Absolutely amazing quality, amazing recipes. The recipes are easy to follow to make and quick to make with steps and pictures to guide you along the way. Look, I am a guy that, look, I can get on the grill. rest of my cooking abilities are kind of limited. HelloFresh makes it really easy. It is unbelievable. My wife loves it. We get 3 to 4 to 5 meals a week, and I'm trying foods that I probably would have never eaten before. So you gotta check out HelloFresh. We had a little bowl last night that was just absolutely amazing. Looking forward to the couple other meals we got coming up this week. So you got to check out HelloFresh. Look, I love to eat food. I will tell you, like, I'm eating poblano peppers. I'm eating zucchini. I'm eating all types of things, Pete, that normally I would not eat. So you got to check out HelloFresh. And they have got a great deal for my listeners. Go to HelloFresh.com/MMAReport10 and use the code MMAReport10 for 10 free meals, including free shipping. Go to HelloFresh.com/MMAReport10 and use the code MMAReport10 for 10 free meals, including free shipping. And HelloFresh, they are America's number one meal kit. I look forward to the box that I get every Monday. It is absolutely amazing. I know, Pete, you have had HelloFresh, and I know Bree likes to cook a little healthy, and I will tell you this, the first time I got HelloFresh, I got the calorie smart box, and it comes in, and my wife kind of looks at me and goes, okay, you know, and then, like, we had all the food. It was just absolutely amazing.
Yeah, my girlfriend absolutely loves HelloFresh, and we've been having it every night for dinner. We tried the vegetarian option where it was just all different vegetarian meals, which was fantastic. And then we just introduced the normal meals to normal dinners. And I have to say, high quality stuff and very tasty.
Yeah, man, it is so good. I sit there, and we actually, last night, every Tuesday night, we sit on the couch there and we figure out exactly what we're going to have. And man, it was... Man, it's just absolutely amazing. My wife wanted to try HelloFresh. They came on as an advertiser. And, of course, I appreciate everyone that does check them out here on the MMA Report podcast. I do want to mention this question that I got for Pete. This was from @MC_Moondog. He said, would love to know what goes through a fighter's head when he or she lays her head on the pillow on the eve of fight day, Mr. Pete.
Yeah, It's too late to back out now. It's a mix of emotions, a mix of thoughts. Your mind is racing like crazy, and it's like, wow, okay, well, this is really here. So it's time to step up and show off all your hard work. I will say that the night before is very nerve-wracking, but nothing compares to when you're in the back in the locker room. I think that's the worst. But as soon as you start to make that walk, everything's okay. Night before, for me, like, I'm always analyzing every possible position and situation. And sometimes I will say overthinking. And, you put so much thought behind it that it could cloud your judgment, it could cloud your reaction time. So over the years, I have gotten better with that and have just learned to trust all of my training and everything. Since I prepare hard, it's not like I'm pulling a Mike Perry, partying and showing up to the gym once every couple of weeks or whatnot. But it's very nerve wracking. But, I always tend to sleep well, surprisingly. And then you wake up in the morning, you feel like you're in a dream. Like, oh, boy, it's fight day. OK, here we are.
You know, the one thing I always tell people is, I've been, with the Buccaneers Radio Network, for 17 years now. And I'll tell you that the games I hate are night games, especially when you're on the road, because literally you're just sitting in a hotel all day long.
Yeah. Fight day is brutal. I think fight day is very difficult because, like, when you wake up in the morning, it's not like a jiu-jitsu tournament where you hop in the car and you go there and you compete and it's all done within a couple hours. Like, I remember one time for my, not my Bellator debut, but when I scored a fast knockout, I was like after the main event. So I was a post-limb. So we literally were told to show up super early. So I think I was there at 4:30 and I didn't end up fighting till 11:30 or 12 PM at night. And I was just in the back, not knowing when I was going to go because they told me I was the swing bell. So I'm like, oh man, this is going to be my shot. I'm going to fill in for TV if so I'm literally warming up Jason for hours. And then I'm like, oh my goodness, is this ever going to happen? And I'm doing rounds and sparring in the back. And then ultimately it was like 11:30, 12 PM when I went out there and, it's just crazy. The nerves and the buildup behind it. But when the fight is over, man, it's the best feeling in the world. and you can't wait to do it again. It's such a weird experience. It's hard to explain.
I like to call that hashtag ticket seller problems.
Yeah. Right. Yes. Hometown problems for sure.
I learned that very early on traveling to Bellator events when the one time it really sticks out to my memory was Steve Garcia, who was in New Mexico, and that's where he's from. And I remember I was getting to the venue early because there was a conference call for Tito and Rampage. And so I get there, and I text one of the Bellator PR people at the time, and I said, "Hey, I'm here. Can you let me in?" And they let me in. And so we're walking in, and I go, "Who's this Steve Garcia guy?" I had no clue who he was at this point. And they go, "Oh, he's a local fighter. He was the first fight." I go, "Was?" They go, "Yeah, he sold so many tickets. He's now the last fight of the night. He will go on after the main event." Because, I mean, look, these promoters, because obviously a big part of Bellator's, when you have people in the building, is those ticket sellers. And early on, they learned that sometimes when you have a fan that just comes to watch Pete Rogers compete, they might just bolt once Pete fights. And so they've kind of learned. I mean, it's the good and the bad of being a massive ticket seller. Cause when you're the massive ticket seller, you got a little leverage on the promotion, but you might be like Pete and warming up for 5 hours.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's a good problem to have, I guess, because it does show value, but that's why you're banking on that swing bout. Like, oh my goodness, I need this main card to end early. So they just throw me in.
Yeah, you're like, come on, punch a first round finish. Just put me on TV. And look, the other reason they potentially put on TV is because they know you got a lot of fans in attendance, and it's gonna sound good on TV. On Monday, Stefan Struve announced his retirement, and we always kind of get in these of like your memories of Stefan Struve. I think for me, one of the biggest memories from a fight aspect is going to be that win against Stipe Miocic back in 2012. But the other side, I saw someone else kind of talk about this. I never thought about Stefan Struve. Of how difficult it had to be for him to actually get to fight week. And because he's a 7-foot guy and flying commercial of what that was like, going to a hotel room where those beds are not made for someone who's 7 feet tall.
Yeah, absolutely. In addition to that, all of his heart problems that he's had and the health problems and, suffering defeats and getting knocked down and then, retiring a couple times and now ultimately, retiring for real. I feel for Stefan Struve, and definitely the win over Stipe Miocic is easily, I think, his best highlight. It has aged really well. I was out in Vegas when that occurred. So that was my very first MMA bet. So that was awesome. He came through for me there. I will say that, Stefan Struve is going to be remembered as a very big guy for the division. Mm-hmm. And you hate to say it, but like so much untapped potential because of what he could have done with his style, with his long jab and his long reach. He does have some amazing victories on there, but you just think if he kind of molded his style a little bit to be more straight shots, front kicks, jabs, crosses, how he could have really been a problem for the division. At a time, he was taking out some big guys, some big names, but I just feel like with a guy with his stature and his skill level, like he was pretty skilled even on the ground standing up, he just was susceptible to getting hit by a big shot. I still think that he's a very good fighter and could have been even better.
Yeah, I mean, he's just one of those guys. I mean, when you kind of you look at the quote unquote negative aspect of it, of what if he would have ever effectively used that reach to his advantage of what he could have been? I mean, you'd always joke about it, like, okay, is this a fight where Stefan actually is going to use that jab to his advantage? And just, it never happened.
Yeah. I don't know why. And I'm sure we're not the only people that have seen this. Everybody's been screaming it in the MMA community. So I know that his coaches have probably worked on it with him. It could just be, I don't know, whether it's lacking confidence in it or liking other techniques, enjoying the clinch game a little too much. As a tall guy, you don't want to engage in the clinch game because now you're really just giving that shorter fighter an advantage. So, I wish the best for Stefan Struve and whatever he chooses going forward. But thank you for the memories in the UFC.
Here's the thing that I always say, Pete, and I'll say it to you when you decide to say that R word. I never believe it. Mm-hmm. Stephen Struve was only 32 years old.
That's crazy.
You know, obviously he's got the health issues, but you wonder if those health issues are not there, is he calling it a career at 32 years old?
You wonder, and also you wonder if people start offering them big paychecks because, like, the money does run out as a fighter. You somewhat don't know much else. You know, there are some cases where people are talented in other areas, but a lot of times you're a fighter by choice and by skill. And I feel like when the money runs out, if you're not getting a job or you're not interested in coaching, then how are you going to provide for your family?
Yeah, no, you're spot on about that. Of course, myself and Pete will have our DFS shows this week on Osmo on Thursday night at 8:05 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And then on Saturday, Live 4 Lock will be on at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, leading us up to UFC Fight Night, Blades versus Lewis. I'll mention this kind of this DFS question. I know me and Pete have talked about this before in the past, but Michael has hit us up and said, this is a card with heavyweights, maybe go over the newest DK scoring system. As it relates, you know, the big thing would be is potentially a finish in the first 60 seconds to get those 25 bonus points. You look at the Blades fight, obviously how many takedowns does he get? Control time potentially. Can he keep Derek Lewis on the ground? I think, you know, it's going to be kind of interesting about that. Obviously, we'll talk more about this on Thursday on the show on Osmo. It's just, you know, we've seen that quick burst that you see from Derek Lewis. You know, getting back to his feet of exactly how will Curtis Blaydes handle that. He talked about that previously when this fight is going to happen. But, that new DK scoring system, if you're not a volume puncher and a fight stays on the feet, it's not exactly the greatest scoring system.
Yeah, agree. You know, Derek Lewis isn't the most technical when he's trying to stand up from the mat, but he's so powerful and strong that he just wills his way up. If you look back on the Curtis Blaydes, Alexander Volkov fight that did go the distance, tons of takedowns, you had Curtis Blaydes with 14 takedowns and 19 minutes and 52 seconds of control time. So I think that is amazing if you think about that. And, like, you know, that control time could be a factor here because I don't foresee Derek Lewis being able to get up to his feet as well as Alexander Volkov did.
Well, here's the other thing that I remember about that Curtis Blaydes fight. Is that gas tank was done after about 3.5 rounds.
It was, but I think it's because of the skill and the will of Alexander Volkov. Like, I understand that Derek Lewis is a bigger body and more powerful, but I do feel like Alexander Volkov's takedown defense and you know, his get up ability is so much better than Derek Lewis. So it made Curtis Blaydes work, you know, extra hard for things. But, you know, you did see Blaydes gasping, and he is at elevation, and I know that he is surrounded by talented fighters there, so his work rate is top notch. You know, that's always in question when you're talking about heavyweights, right? Like, who's gonna get knocked out first, or who's gonna fatigue first?
I will tell you, just from a fight aspect, not DFS related, I'll tell you some of the fights that interest me. I'm really interested to see Tom Aspinall taking on a veteran in Andre Arlovski. I mean, we joke about how Aspinall is your boy, but this is, you know, 2-0 in the UFC. We've seen him look great. Now he's taking on a veteran. This is a litmus test to see where he's at. I don't know how long this fight's going to last, but I think it's going to be a fun fight to watch. That's Julian Arosa and Nate Landwehr. I think someone's likely getting knocked out on that one. They both like to talk trash inside the cage, so that should make that fight a little bit fun. Pat Sabatini making his UFC debut, stepping up on short notice to take on Rafael Alves. That one sticks out to me. I spoke to Jared Vandera, who's going to be making his UFC debut against Sergey Spivak. They were actually scheduled to fight in December. That did not happen because of a positive COVID test for Vanderall. They were actually supposed to fight over in Russia at one point. That fight obviously never did take place there as well. Eddie Wineland, you know, he can't be, you know, doesn't seem like he can be a boring fight. See what Castaneda can do. Rosa and Derek Minner, I'm interested if that fight hits the ground, what's it look like?
Yeah, I'm interested as well. I mean, it's going to be beautiful scrambles, beautiful submission attempts. We know that Charles Rosa has an incredible ground game. But obviously that Bryce Mitchell defeat kind of really sticks out in our memory of how a stronger wrestler was able to just kind of nullify his strength on the ground. So you know, overall, a very nice card. You know, we'll talk about it all week. They book 15 fights in hopes that they get 12. And I hopefully that, you know, no fights cancel out here, but we are in Vegas, Jason.
I mean, like, literally, like, if there was a line out there that said, will a fight get canceled from this card? It's going to be like minus 1,000.
Yeah. And I would play it.
I mean, yeah, it's just like the, you know, you hope it doesn't happen, but you just know, I mean, it just tends to happen for whatever reason, but, we'll break this one down for you, you know, coming up on Thursday night over at awesomo.com for our DFS strategy show. Of course, be sure to check out my presenting sponsors this week. That is Roman and HelloFresh. Well, for HelloFresh, all you got to do is go to HelloFresh.com/MMAReport10 and use the code MMAReport10 for 10 free meals, including free shipping, and head over to GetRoman.com/MMAReport today. And if you're approved, you'll get $15 off your first order of ED treatment plus free 2-day shipping. So that's going to do it for this edition of the MMA Report podcast. Of course, great way to show your support for the podcast is by leaving a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or whatever podcasting platform you are listening to. I will be back on Sunday for the next edition of the MMA Report podcast. Scheduled to be joining me on the show coming up on Sunday, Chris Gutierrez, who's coming off that win here past this past week at the UFC event. Also, Cody Brundage, who is coming off a win in LFA. So those interviews will be on Sunday's edition of the MMA Report podcast. As always, appreciate everyone tuning in, and I will talk to you on Sunday with the next edition of the MMA Report podcast here on your favorite podcasting platform and radioinfluence.com.
I'm Jerry P. Tuck, CEO of Radio Influence. I just wanted to take a quick moment to say thank you for downloading and subscribing to this podcast. There are a lot of people behind the scenes here at Radio Influence that work hard to keep you entertained day in and day out. If you'd like to get involved and advertise on this program, or you have some show ideas that you'd like to see us add to the Radio Influence family, please email us at contact@radioinfluence.com. We all have crazy schedules, so the fact that you took time out of your busy day to let us entertain you for a while means a lot. Without you, the listeners, we wouldn't exist, so thank you again for downloading and subscribing to this show. Don't forget to check out radioinfluence.com to see what other shows we also have to offer. All of Radio Influence's programming can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, radioinfluence.com.